From the 1011 Now streaming studio in Lincoln, Nebraska, this is the End Report Husker Show.
Hi, everyone. Bill Rentschler in the 1011 Now streaming studio, joined as always by my partner in crime, sports director Kevin Suits, on a busy Wednesday afternoon. We kind of got a lot to talk about. There's been a few things happening in the Husker world over the past several weeks. The most recent of which was yesterday when you had new athletic director Troy Dannon introduced officially to the fans and the media of Nebraska.
I think some people are like, why are we doing this? Because Troy Dannon, that news had already been, 5 days old,
yeah.
6 days old?
Yeah.
Everybody knew he was the new athletic director. And in that short time, Bill, it was less than a week, he went to Memphis, he went to Corvallis, watched a game at Boland Stadium, was at Memorial Stadium taking some pictures and finding out where his new office is going to be. So he covered a lot of ground in a short amount of time. And if you didn't know the Troy Dannon news conference was happening on Tuesday, it might have caught you a little bit by surprise, because it you would have assumed that he already had been introduced.
He's already been on. Hey, he hit the ground and he was running. At that point, it's like, does he even need an introductory press conference? He's been to so many places and met so many teams already. Again, he's on the Capitol lawn with the football team during their mat drills or competition day, whatever that was.
He had even done an interview, too.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, his introductory press conference was not his first interview with the local media, because that happened down in Memphis.
It was during
everybody, of course, was excited to meet Troy Dannon, learn a little bit about him. So for the media members that were in Memphis for Nebraska playing in the NCAA men's basketball tournament, we of course wanted an opportunity to just say hello, shake a hand, and find out a little bit about his whirlwind journey to become Nebraska's athletic director, because I was among that group. One of the questions I had for him was, from the outside looking in, it seemed like this is – what just happened? Like, did becoming Nebraska's AD, was that even on your radar? And he kind of itemized how he was down at a function in Florida as Washington's AD, flies back, and by the time he's on the ground flying back, it's already out that he is going to become Nebraska's AD.
I think if you looked up the definition of whirlwind in the dictionary, you would see a picture of Troy Dannon next to it, because, like you said, it all happened really fast. I think, you know, kudos to Chris Kaburek. It sounds like was really, you know, had a big part in this hire. I don't think I expected, just a week after Albert's announced that he's leaving, that hey, here he is, signed, sealed, delivered. He's already at Husker Athletic events. And from another Big Ten, you know, institution in Washington.
But it seems like the dust is starting to settle. And that,
thankfully,
that was what was really nice about Tuesday. There weren't a whole lot of scheduling conflicts. And it seemed like now that the whirlwindness of last week, Bill, it's starting to subside. So I'm sure Troy is able to have a little bit clearer of a mind in terms of what his vision is to be the leader of Nebraska's athletics, how he evaluates some of the programs. He was very thoughtful in sharing his thoughts on sharing his just analysis of the Nebraska football program, documenting his relationship with Matt Rhule. He's got a lot of faith in Matt Rhule. And Matt Rhule played a role in Troy Dannon getting hired at Nebraska. Interim president Chris Kaburek even said that anytime he called Matt, Matt answered the call, no matter the time. And it seemed like the Regents, President Kaburek, and whomever else, they were in pretty regular communication with Matt, because he had the relationship Matt and Troy Dannon did going back to their time in the American Conference.
So
Dannon was the AD at Tulane at the time, and that's when Coach Rhule was coaching at Temple.
Yeah, and so that's where they kind of first crossed paths. So listening to him yesterday, Kevin, again, what were your kind of takeaways, you know, maybe in what his priorities are going to be as new athletic director? Again, he's coming in. He's got a lot of good coaches on his roster. He doesn't have to necessarily make any big hires like he did when he got to Washington when Kalen DeBoer left.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. A lot of times when athletic directors are hired, they are hired and they have a big, strong decision to make in terms of what to do with a coach or a situation within a program. Troy Dannon comes in into a pretty luxurious situation. When Trev Alberts abruptly decided to leave and unexpectedly left, we even ran a graphic of all the different programs at Nebraska and what they had recently accomplished. And any AD would happily walk into that situation a softball team with one of the best players in the country, a baseball team whose RPI is in the top 10, the men's and women's basketball tournaments both going to the NCAA tournament, or men's and women's program both going to the NCAA tournament, the football team, the needle is pointed up with the top quarterback in the incoming recruiting class already on campus. I could keep going, but I'll stop there. You get the point that all these programs are in a really good spot. So to answer your question, Bill, what was my big takeaway from Troy? I think that also answers your question of in terms of his vision for the programs, and that is he wants to win. It struck me how highly competitive Troy Dannon is. And he was even saying, like, every decision that they want to make, whether it's regarding the economics of the athletic department, like every budget line item, and every decision that they make in terms of student-athlete welfare and personnel and coach, like, does it help them win? Mm-hmm. So he's not going to pay a whole lot of attention to things that just look nice on the outside. And I think he's pretty singular-minded in trying to always make sure his teams have success on the field. Obviously, there's an academic piece as well, but that's my number one takeaway. I think he's a really competitive person. And then also, he referenced multiple times, I guess if there are two words to know about Troy Dannon's time with the media on Tuesday, recruitment and retention. He mentioned those two over and over and over again. And those kind of align with NIL and how to operate in the current space that is name, image, and likeness and players being compensated. He's forward-thinking, and he's willing to embrace the new world of college athletics. He even joked that he might be wearing 1890 gear as much as he does Nebraska gear because he understands it is that important. And why is he going to do that? Not just because he likes the 1890 shirt or logo or anything like that. No, because he understands by doing that and supporting Nebraska's collective, he's going to help recruit and retain the student athletes on campus. And that all goes back to his number one thing, which is winning.
And you saw Trev. I don't really think Trev ever really maybe like fully embraced that 1890 collective. He would mention it occasionally, but it sounded like Troy Dannon, again, like you said, he's going to be wearing their gear. So it's going to be a warm embrace between those two.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess one other personal story from the Troy Dannon introduction on Tuesday, like I put a video out late last night because I noticed when Troy was going to the podium to be introduced and his family with him, like as they're about to go up the steps, like his daughter reached over and gave him a huge hug, like a waist hug because she's elementary school. I thought that was just such a sweet and tender moment. Here he is about to take the stage in front of all the coaches at Nebraska and the regents and the interim president and so many other staff members at the University of Nebraska. And, like, that's what happened moments before he got on the stage. And then we have some video when it was all done where he's about to reach over and shake somebody's hand, but he stops and he sees his daughter and they embrace again. I think I put something to the caption of, like, Troy Dannon, girl dad. And it was just so real to me. It's, you know, especially in that job, let's be real. Athletic directors spend a lot of time away from their families. They're on the go. They're at events. There's a lot to do as an athletic director, especially at a Power Five university. So for him to have this very special, what appears to be a very special and very tight relationship with his daughter, you know, as a girl dad myself, it kind of hit me in the feels a little bit. And Troy even said, you know, when he was giving his thanks at the very beginning, he said, I'm going to talk about my family and I might get emotional. So family means a lot to Troy, and I respect the heck out of that.
Yeah, and again, we heard from the very, very beginning, as soon as we kind of heard his name, you know, this was a move to be closer to family, be closer to home. Again, he's not a native Nebraskan, but from Iowa. And again, a lot of family, his parents, I think his wife's parents, both, you know, in the immediate area. So plays a big role in his life.
Yeah, and he grew up watching Nebraska, adoring Nebraska. What did he tell me in Memphis? It's like he had a childhood romance with Nebraska. And so that's part of the, like, oh my goodness factor for Troy Dannon is, you know, one of the programs he grew up watching and revering, he now is at the very top of the food chain in terms of the athletic department.
So one of the big things a lot of people have questions about, again, with changing athletic directors now, is the stadium renovation. What does that look like? That's a big thing to walk into. You know, obviously, we just talked about he doesn't have to necessarily worry about coaches. That's probably one of the biggest things that's going to be on his plate. And like you said just a second ago, you know, wants to win, wants to spend the money in the right places to make sure he wins. Do you think we maybe see some changes coming to that stadium renovation again, the proposed $450
million? Does a $450 million stadium renovation help you win?
I don't think so.
No, it's nice for the fans.
Yeah.
And if it looks really nice, it's a recruiting tool.
Yeah.
But I think what's currently over there at on Vine Street is pretty nice.
Yeah.
And it's a recruiting tool in itself. So yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know this. I have no substantial information here, but I wouldn't be surprised if the renovation project slows down.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't completely align with what Troy Dannon wants to do right now, and that's make sure his teams win. Of course, you have to accommodate fans, and you have to be at the forefront of, you know, modern engineering and having a good environment for your fans to go to. But if he's about winning right now, you're making sure your players are taken care of. You're making sure that nutrition is right. You're making sure the practice facilities are good. You're making sure you're keeping good athletes, like all student athlete and coach minded decisions. And I think that the stadium project is a fan centered endeavor.
And,
and plus $450 million, Bill. I think even, you know, when that was first announced, I guess it was a little bit divisive, right?
Yeah.
Some people didn't see a need for it. Some people are like, yes, finally. South Stadium isn't the greatest viewing experience. In the $450 million price tag, with Trev Alberts as the AD, there was even some like, how is the money going to come? It's just such a huge task. So Troy Dannon said he needed to like research, learn about, and really try to understand what that project looks like before he makes any sort of public comment regarding it. He also snuck this in. He said, I need to find out what the buy-in is. And the buy-in doesn't mean the price tag. It means, is everybody on board with this?
Mm-hmm.
And I would say before Troy Dannon even said that, I still questioned how much overwhelming buy-in there was. I think there are some people that are all for renovating Memorial Stadium and making the changes that were previously outlined and made public. But it's not everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a new employee at a place, you know, with as many stakeholders as Nebraska, you're probably going to make decisions that everybody is pretty much 99 to 100% in agreement with.
Yeah.
And I don't know that Memorial Stadium's renovation is in that category.
Yeah, you have a lot of cooks in the kitchen, mm-hmm. as it were. I mean, you even had Governor Pillen, who I think was kind of involved in this whole process as well, at least with getting Dannon. But again, I think if you were to ask an average fan, do you want a $500 million stadium renovation, or do you want a 10-2 team that's, you know, in the top tier of the Big Ten? I think they're going to say the latter.
But couldn't you see, like, instead of a $450 million renovation project, it becoming a $50 million renovation project? Like, maybe not the whole shebang.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe still make some progress toward mm-hmm. renovating. And, you know, no big decisions need to be made right now, especially with somebody in the situation that Troy Dannon is in. He has so much to do. And he's already done so much in a short amount of time. But if you were to, like, list out everything he wants to get accomplished here by, let's say, mid-April, or maybe by Nebraska spring game, that has to be, like, 150 items deep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not to mention just getting to start to build a relationship with all the coaches on Nebraska's campus.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of forces that I think push against the Memorial Stadium project right now.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to watch. Again, I don't know if we're going to find anything out anytime soon about that. But again, I certainly wouldn't be surprised if there was a change.
I would feel confident talking to Troy about it in about a month.
Yeah.
And just say, okay,
what are your thoughts?
What do you know now?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and what do you think? I don't think he would have a decision within a month of, you know, we're going to do this. We're going to move forward with it. We're going to revise it. We're going to pull the plug on it. I don't know that he would be in that space within a month, but I do think he would have a better understanding. Because you'd have to give him or anyone else some time to truly educate themselves and then also get the pulse of, like, everybody else around him. Because $450 million, you have to have a lot of people with you helping you out in that endeavor.
Yeah, that's no small project. Anything else on Dannon before we move on?
I think we're good.
So the other thing we want to talk about was kind of putting a bow on the basketball season, both men and women. Again, season ending a little bit sooner than we had hoped. But again, both teams making it to the NCAA tournament. You were in Memphis for the Husker takeover. Kind of tell us about your experience down there on Beale Street.
We're not talking basketball. We're talking about environment, right?
Either one.
No, we'll go. We're not surprised, though, right?
No.
Nebraska fans completely took over Memphis.
Give them a reason to go somewhere, and they'll do it.
You know, it's interesting. The best team that was at the Memphis site for the NCAA tournament was Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple of people I talked to that were there for Houston. They were like, oh, my goodness, your fans are everywhere. So the team expected to make the deepest tournament run was impressed with the team that has never won an NCAA tournament game. And I think Nebraska fans can all wear that badge of honor and badge of pride to say, like, this is what we do.
Yeah.
You know, and we can document Ireland, Colorado, and Tampa for the volleyball final. Like, it's just a part of Nebraska's fandom mm-hmm. is that they will take over a place. And I even had one gentleman tell me that he would be willing to bet some pretty good money that Silverhawk Aviation in Lincoln was probably the busiest it's ever been on the Friday of Nebraska's NCAA tournament game, because he knew of so many private planes that were flying day of to go watch Nebraska. And I guess that was one of the benefits of having an evening game, was it allowed some people to travel earlier in the day on Friday. And, you know, having been around Beale Street on Wednesday and Thursday, it just slowly kept growing. Wednesday, there were some Nebraska fans. Thursday was the day Nebraska practiced. There were some fans in the stands. But as the day wore on, you saw more and more red. And if you didn't know any better, if you were to walk into one of the restaurants on Beale Street, you would have thought that you were on O Street in Lincoln or somewhere in the rail yard right outside of Pinnacle Bank Arena on game day, because it was red from the first door you walked into all the way back to the back wall. And it was a pretty special environment, and it was just Nebraska fans doing what Nebraska fans do.
And so the game itself then, I had to, like, pause it watching it because it was the first 8 minutes, it was so fast, and there was everything was going in, and it was giving me anxiety. And I had to just pause it, and I had to be like, okay. And the first 8 minutes were great, and then everything after that, things just kind of rolled downhill a little bit.
I would agree. I like being a fan of offense.
Yeah.
Like, the first 8 minutes were incredible. Nebraska started 5 of 5 from beyond the arc. And in those five shots, you had a couple of Keisei Tominaga heaters, including one where, as he's walking back down the court, his arms are outstretched. He's around midcourt.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just one of those moments, like, wow. And the energy in the building at the beginning, because it was Nebraska makes a bucket, A&M makes a bucket, and then back and forth. And it was pretty charged up. And beyond the basketball, starting 9 of 10 from 3 between the two teams is absolutely unheard of. But can you imagine, you know, I know you watched it from a different location than I did. Like, the energy in the building was so, like, it was 8 minutes of basketball bliss.
Yeah.
It was very entertaining. And I don't know if people at home got the sense of, like, how, like, there was so much energy before the game. And you could just feel, like, it was a special, special occasion. It's the tournament, and there's Go Big Red, there's Husker Power, and this is happening during warm-ups. And, you know, Nebraska had gone in to the locker room, except Josiah Alec was on the free throw line, and usually he is one of the last ones to shoot, and he can't go into the locker room until he makes his last shot. And he missed a couple, and then finally, like, the team's already in the locker room, Bill, and he finally makes that last one. And the place goes crazy for Josiah Alec making his final warm-up free throw.
Yeah.
And then the big screen inside of FedEx Forum in Memphis, it was just showing random people in the crowd, right?
Yeah.
And this is nothing new, nothing out of the ordinary for a host site. Anytime that they would show anybody with, whether it's a Nebraska pin on a lapel or a Nebraska hoodie or a little kid with the Nebraska cheerleader out, like, the whole place would go, ah! And then they would show up anybody with A&M gear, whether it's a cheerleader or somebody in the stands, and then everybody booed. So it was just like this roller coaster of, like, ah, ooh, ah. And this is before tip-off. The teams were in the locker room.
Yeah.
And then they come out, and then they start going bucket for bucket for bucket for bucket. And you can just imagine how just the atmosphere continued to build and grow, and the environment was like just bottle that up, and it was a lot of fun. So we're only talking about the first 8 minutes.
Yeah, I know. And then yeah, it was electric again.
And then A&M started making some buckets, and Nebraska started to cool off. Bryce Williams told me after the game, because I tried to ask about the like how much fun was it at the beginning, and he kind of looked at me like, "What are you saying? We didn't get no stops." So he was more frustrated,
yeah.
And I had the mindset of like,
"That was so much fun.
That was awesome." Juwan Gary said, "He goes, it was like a pickup game because they were just making everything."
Yeah,
and that was kind of cool. But Bryce hit the nail on the head. You know, as fun as it was for all the fans and everybody else in the building, it was frustrating from Nebraska's perspective because they knew they needed to get some stops. And A&M went into that game shooting less than 30% from beyond the arc. They're a 29% three-point shooting team entering the NCAA tournament.
300 and whatever in the NCAA in three-point shooting.
And it wasn't just Wade Taylor IV hitting threes.
It was everyone.
They had everyone making threes.
Yeah.
And so it just kind of wore down. Nebraska cooled off. A&M stayed hot. I was very impressed with Buzz Williams out of a timeout. I think A&M scores nearly every time they get the ball out of a timeout. And I that's one of the things that I always watch when I'm watching basketball, because I think it indicates good coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And they were scoring at a pretty high clip any time that there was out of a timeout, including one time they pulled Taylor off of a screen, and it was kind of a contested three. I don't know that he was completely on balance, and he made it, and I think that put A&M up like 9. This is about mid-first half. And my initial reaction was like, why'd they shoot that? And then I was reminded, they came out of a timeout. They had said in the huddle, that's option one, we're going to shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
And he had made about every three-pointer he had attempted at that point anyway.
Yeah.
So for me, that was kind of the moment. It's going to be a moment I'll remember about that game, because on the surface it looked like a horrible shot selection. But once you take a step back and you think about it and process what it just – all the circumstance of it, that's when you knew A&M was in its groove, and they felt pretty confident, not only in that play, but in the entire game plan.
Yeah, they could basically do anything they wanted to on the offensive side of the court, driving right down the lane. I mean, they looked like a running back shot out of a cannon, and, you know, they just couldn't get anything on defense. So, disappointing end to what was an incredible season. You know, you had the upset win over number one Purdue. You had the comeback win against top 10 ranked Wisconsin. So a lot of good memories from this season.
Absolutely. And what a likable group of guys. And I think everybody knew that at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's reaffirmed even more now that it's done. Because, you know, it is disappointing that they didn't get to play on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And you watch those games and you wish Nebraska would have been on the floor, because you would have gotten another game of Keisei Tominaga and another game with Josiah Alec. And we don't know what the future holds for Juwan Gary and Bryce Williams and Rink Mass. Those guys all have the option to come back. And C.J. Wilcher, C.J. had some tears in his eyes after the game. And the reason for the tears was, yes, it was for the loss, but it was also because that was the last time that locker room was going to look like that, is what C.J. told me. But, yeah, I think part of the enjoyment of the year, Bill, beyond the wins and the court storms and how fun PBA was throughout the year and Nebraska playing so well at home, it's because that was a locker room full of really good guys who stood for the right thing. And they believed in their coach, and they respected the heck out of their coach.
Yeah.
So that the 2024 Nebraska men's basketball team is going to be talked about for years to come.
And Fred Hoiberg already has work to do. You know, moving into the offseason, you know, got the contract extension, which, again, I think everyone was like, yeah, absolutely. You proved it. You earned it. But now you've already had Eli Rice, Rommel Lloyd, and Blaze Cada transfer out of the program into the transfer portal, on top of losing Josiah Alec, as well as Keisei Tominaga, as they exhausted their eligibility. So Fred's going to have some work to do to turn over this roster. And that's without any of the decisions from the players you just named.
Yeah, but this isn't anything out of the ordinary with college basketball right now. You know, when the portal opened, and there were how many hundreds of athletes already in the portal? And it seems like every time that I refresh social media, you see another big name entering the portal. So if you're a fan and you're like, oh my goodness, Nebraska just lost three players to the portal, and they've got two that have exhausted their eligibility, like, look at what happened last year. Nebraska added Rink Mass. They added Bryce Williams. You know, you can come out on the better end of it. It's just sometimes you get emotionally attached to certain players, and you hate to see the roster turn over as much as it did. And there are some players that I know fans want to see come join the program, including, you know, we heard today that Frankie Fiddler is going to take a visit to Nebraska on Thursday. And I know fans would love to have Frankie Fiddler at Nebraska. I'm not saying that he will, but he had a tremendous career at UNO and ranked among the top 20 national scoring leaders this year. And I'm excited to see what Frankie could do in the SEC or the ACC or the Big East or the Big Ten, wherever he lands, because I think he's that good. And the reason I bring him up, Bill, is because even though you lose, you will still gain. And Brett Hoiberg has proven that over his 5 years as Nebraska's head coach. He will go out and he will bring players in that will help the team.
It's just so different. I mean, I know this is the new norm now, but it's just so different from what it used to be even just 5 years ago. You know, of having, you know, players, young players sit on the bench, red shirt, then they join the lineup, and it's, this is the new norm. Is you're basically going to have a new, I mean, what, four, five, six players on your roster every year.
All right. The Big Ten teams that are still playing right now in the NCAA tournament. We got Illinois. They have an all Big Ten point guard, Marcus Damask, who was playing at Southern Illinois last year. So a portal addition who is now one of the most important pieces to a Sweet 16 team, who came from the Missouri Valley. Purdue's still playing, right? Of course, Zach Edey. And they have Fletcher Lawyer. But Lance Jones is one of the best players on that team, one of the biggest role pieces of that squad. Transferred in last year and transferred in from a mid-major. It's just the reality of college basketball.
So that was the men. The women also had another great season. Amy Williams, again, big win over Iowa at home Super Bowl Sunday. They made it out to Corvallis for their opening round of the NCAA tournament. They beat Texas A&M. But then and they end up losing to Oregon State, who was the host. Not sure if I'm a huge fan of kind of the way the women's tournament was kind of organized, with those top seeds getting kind of the home court advantage. I understand that's kind of how it works in some of the other sports. I didn't even like that they didn't even take off the team decals on the court to throw on, you know, March Madness decals or something like that. But the women's season ends in Corvallis. I think it was a 61-51 loss to Oregon State.
Correct. He just didn't play the greatest in that second round game. It was a little bit frustrating for the fans. Nebraska shot fairly poor. Like, I don't know if they finished shooting for the game, but I know at one point in the second half, Nebraska was shooting 29% from the floor.
It's not going to get it done.
No. And it was a frustrating game because one of the best players for Oregon State got in foul trouble, but she never fouled out. And Nebraska struggled to score inside. Jazz Shelley led the team in scoring, but she had a pretty quiet day. A lot of her buckets came in the fourth quarter. And Nebraska got down by 15, I want to say, in the first half. And they were able to work their way all the way back and make it a one-possession game. They just could never get over the hump. And then at the end, when Nebraska made its comeback in the fourth quarter, Oregon State continued to get a little bit of separation. And Nebraska just wasn't shooting well enough in that game that ultimately ended in a season-ending 10-point loss. But, you know, as we talked about the men's program and, you know, thinking fondly of the year, I think everybody will do the same about this women's team because they got the first win in the NCAA tournament under Amy Williams. And then also, look at the cast of characters she just had. You know, Jazz Shelley posted something on social media. This would have been Tuesday night, just a thank you Husker Nation post. And I was thinking, Bill, has there been a more likable player on the women's basketball program over the past 10 years? Or I was even wondering, in women's athletics at Nebraska, you know, who has been as universally liked as Jazz Shelley? There's a couple of volleyball players I can think of, but I just, Jazz was always in front of the cameras, always smiling. And even her post, you should go back and look at it because the replies, there are so many people that posted pictures of their girl with Jazz and the autographs you would stick around and sign. And everybody got to know her. And she's an Australian playing basketball in Lincoln by way of Oregon. But everybody really embraced her, and I think everybody was so thankful she came back for this additional season. And I think, in my opinion, she's one of the most likable Nebraska female athletes over the past 20 years.
You'd be hard-pressed to – if you could build a spokesperson, you would model it after Jazz Shelley.
Yeah.
I mean, just – she was just aces across the board in everything that she did. Time spent with the fans, very open in, you know, in press conferences and how she's feeling, how the team's feeling, and everything like that. So she will be missed.
And you know what? Tell me a time in which Jazz, like, maybe made a misstep in terms of, like, the way she behaved. I can't think of one. You know, she never, like, had a zinger in there at a press conference about officiating or a decision or a teammate. Like, everything was so positive. And there was one moment of potential, quote-unquote, controversy, and that was when Nebraska beat Iowa this February, where she was doing the face guarding signal right after she hit a three, and everybody thought that she was disrespecting Caitlin Clark, which was not the case. Jazz still, like, spoke out about that. Like, she was aware of that and didn't even need to say, listen, I wasn't disrespecting
Caitlin.
She
did that right away, like, right after the game she posted about it.
And I think that goes into it falls in line with why Jazz was so likable, because she avoided any sort of confrontation. She was always smiling. She was always positive. And she brought just so much energy and life to her teammates.
I did. I chuckled at her. She kind of had a little bit of a zinger after they lost in the post press conference. Someone asked her what it meant to be playing with Alexis Markowski and some of her other teammates. Obviously, you know, got emotional, and she's like, "What kind of question is that, man?" Getting her right in the feels.
Well, that's kind of a reporter's job, right? Yeah. Whoever asked the question was looking for, you know,
and they got it.
Some authenticity from her, and certainly got it. Of course, she was fighting tears. And if anything, I got Alexis Markowski more than it did Jazz.
It did. So you lose, you know, Darian White, Jazz Shelley are both going to be gone. Maddie Kroll and Annika Stewart, I believe, already transferred out. So you're losing a couple, again, big pieces there. But obviously, big recruiting class coming in for Amy Williams, obviously headlined by Britt Prince, Elkhorn North. So again, a lot to like for Amy Williams' squad next season as well.
And I would say don't look so much at who's coming in. Of course, Britt Prince, and the expectations of that young lady are going to be pretty high. But look at what these freshmen did this year. And they were really good in the postseason, NCAA tournament, and at the Big Ten tournament. Natalie Potts, Big Ten Freshman of the Year. Callan Hake had a really good postseason, including at the Big Ten tournament. Her first game there was almost a flawless performance. Jess Petrie, like, there are Logan Nisley. There are some young players on that roster who played pretty big roles in their first year of college basketball that are going to be even better next year. Plus, they can, knock on wood, Allison Widener, assuming she can recover fully from her knee injury, her second one. If you get her back into the fold, I mean, this program is going in definitely the right direction.
So moving over really quickly to baseball, because you have latest RPI rankings. Nebraska is at 11th. They're at 17-5 overall. I believe they won 9 of their last 10.
Seven in a row.
They will open Big Ten play this weekend, traveling to Evanston, take on a 3-game set with Northwestern. Will Bolt's squad, they're looking pretty good so far this season. Again, a lot of the big thing last year was a lot of these midweek games they had trouble with against lower competition that really killed their RPI. For the most part, they're handling their business in those games this year.
Well, I understand why they didn't play on Tuesday, because the first pitch temperature would have been, what, 28 degrees down in Manhattan, Kansas?
Close to it.
I was bummed I didn't get to watch that game, though, because Kansas State's ranked 25th. And I think that the teams appear pretty even, if not Nebraska might be a smidge better than K-State. So I was very excited for that midweek game. But, of course, it got canceled. K-State comes to Lincoln and Haymarket Park on May 1st. But the schedule's going to start to turn a little bit here. Mm-hmm. Big Ten play begins. Nebraska starts with Northwestern, who's at the bottom of the conference. Mm-hmm. So hopefully Nebraska can have some success on the road, then come back, and then Creighton in Omaha on Tuesday, and then you're going to start to get into the throes of the conference schedule. So we're going to learn a lot about this team over the next 3 weeks. I think 3 weeks is kind of the window for me to really get the gauge for how good they are, because they have some tough midweeks and they're going to be in conference play. And right now they have a ton of momentum, and it seems like they've figured a few things out from the pitching perspective that gives you some hope that this is a team that could have a pretty good season in front of them.
Yeah, keep hearing that name of Brett Sears. Been throwing a lot of good innings for him.
Brett Sears, Drew Christo, Mason McConaughey just was outstanding in a midweek start last week. Now they've moved them to the weekend rotation. Kyle Perry's having, I mean, he's in his 19th season of college baseball. He's having a great year. Tucker Timmerman, the freshman from Beatrice, he's been a really important puzzle piece in the bullpen. So right now, that was one of the issues with Nebraska last year. The pitching was pretty inconsistent. I'd say this year, they've been pretty stinking good.
Yeah. So they'll open with Northwestern, and then Ohio State is their next Big Ten series, and then at Rutgers. So those are kind of the three big ones, and obviously the midweek games against Creighton. They also have one against Kansas. So for that three-week stretch that you were kind of talking about, next 3 weeks, see what it looks like. But a lot to like what we've seen so far, and lost in all of this noise, Kevin, spring football started.
It did, Monday.
Monday. You had Matt Rhule had his sort of pre-spring press conferences actually like 2 weeks ago now. So I wonder if he almost kind of did that on purpose, you know, kind of get it done out of the way, let things settle down a little bit.
Well, it's later. So the traditional schedule for spring football, and it's not just that in Nebraska. A lot of universities do that. They will get some practices in, and then there's spring break. Mm-hmm. And that's the structure last year. And Matt Rhule really did not like that. He didn't like to start, go on break, then come back and restart. He would rather all keep it kind of lumped together. And it actually makes a lot more sense to do it that way anyway. So that's why the spring game is actually a little bit later this year. And so spring football started on Monday. They are practicing, I believe, three times this week, three times next week. So it's going to be a pretty routine 5 week stretch for them, all leading up to the spring game, which I believe is what, April 27th?
Correct. 11
tickets,
a.m.
Tickets officially went on sale today.
Nice. And so I think we will hear from Rhule, I think, tomorrow. Is that, do you know?
We don't know. Pardon us for not having this completely buttoned up because of everything else that has been going on. Media gets to go see practice tomorrow. So we are very excited to go see. Mr. Iola is going to throw some passes. That's going to be fun. And Danny Kalen and get to see the new wide receiver from USC and the new wide receiver from Jamal Banks from Wake Forest. He's a huge guy, by the way.
And if you could, Kevin, can you kind of give people a little bit of a peek behind the curtain in terms of you're using this to not only go and see what everyone looks like, but you guys are using this as an opportunity. This is where you get your file video. You run a story this, you know, whenever, about Jamal Banks or Isaiah Nayor or Dylan Raiola. You're pulling video from a day like on Thursday.
We really don't get to understand what we see because we're looking at it through a camera.
Yeah.
Now, keep in mind, we get, what, 15, 20 minutes to watch practice?
Yeah.
So sometimes our observations come from a, you know, 20 minutes out of a two-hour-long practice.
Yeah.
So we're kind of whittling it down. They don't want us to see everything, too. So your question was, what do we really, how do we glean, how do we...
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong.
We're just trying to shoot as much video as we can.
But you're like, okay, we need video of these 12 players, and then anything
like tomorrow, I bet I'm going to be on quarterback cam.
Yeah.
Right? Because we're going to run Dylan Raiola video in April, and May, and June, and July, and August. You know, like...
Yeah.
And I don't want our viewers to just see the same shots over and over and over again. So in that 20 minutes, I'm going to try to get as much video and differing video of Dylan Raiola so we can continue to keep our, you know, what we put on the news a little bit fresh. And it's not just the same shots over and over and over again. And that's just in the instance of Dylan Raiola. We'll want Danny Kalen stuff. We'll need Heinrich Harburg video. And so sometimes in the window in which we get to watch practice, every second's kind of valuable. We want to try to gather as much video because we just mentioned some players that, you know, we have no video of in a Nebraska uniform. So we will gather all that and we will run the camera, and then it's not until afterwards that we're watching some of our film back.
But you're like, hey.
Yes, and you'll notice some things. And that's been pretty standard protocol, is that, remember one year I was with the tight ends. You know, mm-hmm. I was filming some of the tight ends. Thomas Fedoni's freshman year, maybe. And one of the tight ends went through, and, you know, just running the camera and making sure I got some video. And then it wasn't until afterwards that I had to go, that guy's huge. You know, like, didn't even realize it in the moment because your brain's on other things. You know, the job part of being able to attend to practice.
All right. So you'll have a playlist, as it were, of like, all right, we got to get Raiola, we got to get Kalen, we got to get the new wide receivers, a big game plan.
Is there somebody we're leaving out? Is there anybody that you would recommend to us to make sure we put the camera on? I mean, we can't leave out, like, Ty Robinson.
No, you got to get Ty.
Or Nash, given his spring or his winter. Like
Reimer. Reimer coming back?
Reimer is not coming back.
Who's the linebacker then?
So that's the thing. We need to kind of scour through the roster tonight to make sure we have our list. Yes, there is preparation. It's not just show up and get after it. We have, like, our own little, like, battle plan. You know when in Home Alone where Kevin rips out that big piece of paper and he writes out where he's going to put all the booby traps in the house?
Yeah.
We kind of have a spring football version of that. Who's going to get the linebackers? Who's getting the tight ends? You know, which running backs do we need video of? All that stuff.
It's a work of art, Kevin. It really is. All right. Anything else?
Nope.
We covered it all? All right. I think we got it all.
Troy Dannon, women's basketball, men's basketball, baseball. Can't leave out Nebraska wrestling. Yep. Pretty good showing at Nationals.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody made the finals. Ridge Lovett made the semis. Love Mark Manning. Love that team. They had a great year. It was pretty cool to see and tell some of the stories of this year's season.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, again, Nash obviously was the easiest.
Did you see the Splatel?
No.
If you don't know what I'm talking about, just Google Brock Hardy Splatel. It's made national news.
Okay.
Brock Hardy got stuck in a move that is called a Splatel.
Yeah.
And it's essentially, you know, we don't have a picture or video to show you right now. It is where his back is up against his opponent, and his feet are essentially behind each ear. And it's a very compromising position. And I still don't know how anybody, flexibility-wise, can be held in that position for 40 seconds. But he did it, and then he got up and just kind of like shook it out and then kept on wrestling. It was incredible. So Brock Hardy Splatel, like I said, there have been some national outlets who have now interviewed Brock about getting stuck into a very uncomfortable position.
Oh, my gosh. I think I found it. That looks – I would not get back up from that. Wrestlers, I mean, they are athletes, man.
It's incredible.
All right. We'll go ahead and we'll leave it on that. Kevin, appreciate your time.
Splatel.
As
I'm glad we could teach you something.
Splatel is what we'll have to look up after this. Appreciate everyone for tuning in and watching. As always, again, keep it tuned to 10-11 both on air and online for all of your latest Husker news.
You've been listening to the N Report Husker Show from 10-11. Watch, listen, and stream on the 10-11 Now app, on YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. For more Husker coverage throughout the week, watch the N Report on 10-11 Sports at 6 and 10 p.m. and download the 10-11 Now app.